almost at the bottom of page 39, wise old Solomon, who wasn't wise in everything but wrote many wise things. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole of man. Duty was added. It's the whole of man. It's everything we are. So if we're not following God and keeping his commandments, what are we?
Following the devil.
Following the devil. And we aren't anything. The whole of man is to fear God and keep his commandments. And I don't know that I, at least, was very successful in getting that across to my children. That it's our everything. And maybe you have to be old enough to figure it out for yourself. You know, and maybe it's not something somebody can put on you. But I know that... Yes, ma'am.
Oh, this is a backtrack, so go ahead and finish.
Oh, I just know, as he said, as she says, if we communicate only that one thing to our children, we've been successful.
Well, I know you were talking about training children, and if I could just tell a young person one thing to do, and it's hard, but for the mothers to stay home with their children until they are grown up, then you can do things. But that's the greatest thing you can do for your child. And you say, well, I just have to work. No, you don't most of the time. Sometimes you do.
There are times. But for the most part, I think I've said this before, I used to get real frustrated with people who'd say to me, you're so lucky you get to stay home. Luck had nothing to do with it. It was a decision. And it was a financial decision. You know, it made a difference in our lives financially.
But there's so many things you don't have to have
right. That
you think you have to have.
So you only get one shot at the kids, and you're the only person that's going to be sure you're trying to impart your values. It's as simple as that. And from a professional standpoint, if somebody works with child care, it's bad. The best is bad. Some is less bad than others. Debbie?
And Tippy's said many times before that training a child in the way he should go, and when he's old he won't depart, that saying was not...
It's not a guarantee.
Exactly. It's not a guarantee, you know, but, you know, of course we do what we can. And
right.
So
that's
they're
a proverb. Proverbs are not positive every time.
Right.
But it's the best you can do.
They are a generalized statement about life. Okay, so that gets us to the group discussion questions, and I think quite a few of these are really worth looking at. What are some of the everyday activities that indicate to our children whether we value material or spiritual blessings most highly? What do we do in our lives on a daily basis that says to our kids, God's first in my life, God's important, but not so much?
Your Bible, reading your Bible.
Reading your Bible in front of your children. It's easier to do it later when they're in bed. But it doesn't give a lesson to them. Good morning. So
it's living it instead of just talking.
But how? What do you do that, you know, what are some examples of some things that you do to live it?
Well, when you make a choice, so I'll do this for the Lord. No, I'll put that off and I'll do this other. He has to come first.
Right.
Or he doesn't come first.
Praying.
Praying. In front of and with your children and teaching them how to pray. And
talk when you're just talking to them about problems and stuff. It's like pray about it,
right?
And I think we just say that, but
do we
in
do
the
it?
Passing?
Yeah, but do we do it?
You know, we need to say, "Hey, look, it works."
I try.
It'll make you feel better.
I try very hard not to ever tell anybody that I'll pray for something if I'm not going to do that. I mean, then I'm lying to them and to God. So I try to make sure, and sometimes that's hard. Because you forget. The world gets busy and you forget. So I try to make notes. I try to remember. I told this person I'd pray for that particular thing, and I need to do that.
Our words and our body language. You know, how we handle frustrations. Things
so
like
slamming
that.
The doors and stomping through the room is
exactly.
Not appropriate.
And our language. And,
right. Right. When we make the choice to do the right thing, like you said, the body language about it, somebody's ill and they need some food taken to them and you've agreed to take some food. Are you in the kitchen stomping around and slamming things because you don't really want to be in there? Kids get that. They know. Or are you joyful in that you can, there's something you can do to help? People can help in very odd ways. Glenda, I was going to thank her publicly if she was here. I'll still do it. I'll tell her I did. She had asked me after Freddie died if there was anything she could do. Well, it's really just the family, and there really wasn't anything that anybody could do. She lives in Weatherford, remember? Well, we had to go to East Texas, and I was expecting a box from the office of Head Start by FedEx, and they said an adult had to be there to sign for it. Well, Kaylee's an adult, but she had to go to work at 11. So I've got this whole day, and if I don't get this box, I don't do the work that I told them I'd do. So it's really important. So I called Glenda and asked her if she'd just come sit at my house for the day. And she said, sure, I can do that to help. Now, that's kind of an awful favor to ask of somebody. Give up your day and just come sit over here and wait for the package. But she said, what can I do to help? And when I asked her something, she said, sure, I can do that. That's no problem. Now, fortunately, the package came before Kaylee went to work. Glenda didn't have to come sit at my house. But she was willing to do that. And I don't know, do you have friends in your everyday life who aren't Christians that you'd feel comfortable calling and saying that, asking that of? I don't think I do. I have a lot of Christian friends that I could ask that of. But I don't know if just everyday people would go, well, no, I'm not going to come sit at your house. So, doing the things. Sarah?
I think another thing that we can do to, well, I can do to show my future kids would be not letting things of the world come before church. Like with me, I was raised up, I played sports all my life. And for a majority of my life, I was in tournament softball, so Sunday mornings, we were in tournaments. And for as long as I can remember, I was at a tournament rather than at church. And weekdays, it was high school sports. So, you know, it's just one thing after another, and you can't let those things come before.
No, and it's hard. Stan's talked about that, and my daughter played tournament softball as well. And just can't go Sunday morning. Well, but that's the playoff. And Amy was, she's small, but she was real fast and had a real fast bat. And her team needed her. You can't not be here. Yeah, I cannot be here. I'll tell you the struggle my children deal with. Maybe not so much anymore. They used to go with their father every Memorial Day to a friend's house over in East Texas. And Sunday morning, of course, nobody's going to church. And Amy, from the time she was old enough to drive, she and Kate would get in the car and they'd go worship. And that was a difficult situation for them because they were given a hard time about it. You know, nobody encouraged them, nobody supported them, and people made fun of them. I can't believe you're going to go to church instead of staying here and we're having breakfast on the lake.
And I always say, people, just this one time it will matter. And I'm like, you know how many people say that?
Yeah.
And it's never one time. You know, if I one timed it, you would never go.
Well, and the problem is, especially for kids, I think, more so than adults even, if you do the one time, then your friends are just on you forever. Because, well, I convinced her once. You know, I can do that again. And then they'll say, but you did it last time. Same thing with your children. If you're doing something, no matter what it is, if you let them have a cookie before dinner one time, then forever and ever, but you let me before, you've set a precedent, whether you meant to or not, you have. Cole's 2.5. They come to my house on Tuesdays. He knows everything we ever did one time. You know, I gave him some crackers out of a cabinet that's in my bedroom, where I sometimes eat stuff like that, but not always. Just occasionally there's something in it. And he got up from his nap, I need a cracker. Well, I don't have any up here. Yes, you do. And he went to that cabinet, which didn't have any crackers in it. But one time, he had crackers out of that cabinet. Therefore, every time. And kids are like that. They hold on. So if you say, we're not going to go to services this evening, I just don't feel like it. So next Wednesday night, well, why aren't we going? Well, because we're supposed to. We didn't last week. You didn't want to. So why this week? I mean, you're setting yourself up for big trouble. And I think one of the things that I've noticed as my children have become grown, is they finally start to understand the necessity for being absolute on all these things. Whereas if, I'll say this very carefully, but say you had a Wednesday evening, you don't feel very well, and you'd rather stay home. And you could go, but it'd feel better to stay home. I'm not sure that's horrible to not go. I'm sure it's horrible to not go if you have children in the house that you're trying to train. Because children are black and white. And they don't understand the nuances of, I feel really bad. I could probably stagger there, but I feel really bad. They don't get it. You either go or you don't. And when we start letting all those gray areas get into our decisions with our children, that's how they start believing that there's lots of gray, that there's lots of space to maneuver. And in God's Word, there's not. There are a few areas where we have discretion and opinion. And for the most part, this is a very black and white book. Do this, don't do that, which I personally appreciate. Here, it says I shouldn't do that. Okay, I'm not going to. And you don't have to make all those decisions. But once we start letting that little edge slip in, kids catch it right away. Sarah, I can see you. It's just, you're just dying to tell me something.
Well, I just think about it. I was talking with someone yesterday that, you know, we're supposed to lead by example. And I do think that every time, you know, like my aunt said, just that one time, you know, just this one time, yeah. We'll know, because we're supposed to be showing them that there is no exception. There is not right. Just a one time.
Right.
And maybe it'll make them think, like, you never know what the impact you will have on anybody
That's
else
exactly
will be.
Right.
You don't know what they're thinking whenever they see that, hey, she's not going to stick around. Mm-hmm. She's going to go where she needs to be.
And that sports thing, what if you'd been at services instead of at the ball game? Would your teammates have thought, well, first of all, they've probably been annoyed. Yeah, we'll get over it. But maybe the second thing they think is, it must be really important to her to give this up.
That's one thing I'm trying to teach my dad. My dad still does the tournament ball, mm-hmm. and he still, you know, is gone pretty much every mm-hmm. Sunday morning for softball.
Mm-hmm.
I try to tell him, you know, Dad, you're their coach. Think about what kind of impact you would have right. if you missed. You know, your right. softball game to be at church, what kind of impact you would have on every single one of those girls.
Or the people at church.
Yeah.
Who know he's missing for softball.
Well, and two, with kids growing up, you know, they know, okay, you're not going to be a cheerleader. They want to do that, of course. Mm-hmm. Well, you can't. Why? Well, because their skirts are too short and they're dancing out there,
right.
you know. And when they hear that growing up, they know. And that's like with wearing the shorts to the knees. They can do sports, mm-hmm. but their shorts are going to be down there, and they know that.
Mm-hmm.
And the coaches know that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after Kendra, Kaylee had a fairly easy time because
right.
the coaches, you know, we didn't have to retrain the coaches.
Right.
But, and with the softball thing or any sports, if we could, we would, a lot of tournaments, of course, we weren't every weekend,
right.
But there were some weekends in life. Said the playoffs are on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
We would, if I could go to services in Burleson and we can make the tournament.
Sure.
We did that.
Sure.
And, you know,
there are accommodations.
No problem. Yeah,
make.
You can
sure.
you can make it work.
Yeah. Well, I remember one time, I don't know if you remember this or not, but there was some kind of a band party, and Sharon was in the band with me. It wasn't an official band party. It was some kids who were in the band were having a party. And I don't know how Mother knew about it, because I wasn't going. I was at home. And she said, I guess she asked me why I was home, because I generally was not home on Saturday nights. And I said, oh, everybody's at a party. And she said, well, why aren't you there? I said, they didn't invite me. And she kind of got this funny look on her face, because I went to stuff like that. And I said, no, this is not the kind of party they would invite me to, because they know I won't come, because I'm sure there's going to be alcohol there. Mm-hmm. So they didn't invite me. And that was a step in the right direction. I didn't have to say, no, I'm not coming. They said, she won't come to this. We're not going to ask her. So.
And two, I've heard parents say, school's hard enough on kids, you know. We need to, you know, if they go to a Friday night football game instead of the meeting, that's whatever. And I'm thinking, our attitude was, we're here for them now when they need us. When they get criticized or it's hard or whatever, we're here for them now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when they need to be learning the most,
right.
when we are here to back them up and support them.
Right.
Whereas when they're off on their own and have to make those decisions,
right.
you know, we don't have as much
impact.
And
if they have no practice in making those decisions and no ability to stand up for it. I mean, eventually you get to the point where it doesn't bother. I think there are a couple of steps in it as you're a teenager first of all, people are wanting you to drink and party, and you say no, and they make fun of you and all that. But pretty soon, so you have to be able to bear through that. But pretty soon, they get tired of it. They're not getting anywhere. They're not. Roger and I were talking on the way over. Cole's 2.5, Levi's 1.5. They're sitting in car seats. They can't touch each other. And Cole says, "Make him quit." And I said, "What?" He's looking at me. I thought, really? It starts that young. I didn't remember it starting quite that young. And I was telling him about Mike. Mike was a very quiet guy. He never did anything overtly, but he'd stare at me. Just like that, in the car. I'd say, "Make him quit looking at me." And, of course, my parents are going, "It's not hurting you." But he's going, "Ha-ha, it makes her crazy." So when you learn to get past letting it make you crazy, then they get tired of it. They don't get a reaction, then there's no point in trying to poke you about it. But it takes a while to learn those things.
I got to tell the story. We were going to school one morning. We were running late, as usual, and Jeremiah was little. And I don't know what he was doing, not a lot, but aggravating the other kids. And I kept saying, "Regardless, Jeremiah, regardless, regardless," you know, trying to go and find it. He said, "Stop calling me guardless." So that didn't work at all.
So when I see him tonight, I should say, "Guardless," and see him.
Yeah, I don't even probably remember. But
one other thing about the teachers and things to do that kids can't do when we're worshiping. But the junior high band director was planning things on Wednesday night. This particular night, they're just going out to the mall and play. I think the mall was new. And, of course, you or Susan, I think it was Susan, couldn't go. And so the next time he was supposed to do something on Wednesday night, the band leader at the high school was planned. He says, "Not on Wednesday night. I'm not doing anything else on Wednesday night." Because there was a bunch of Christian kids in there, and they wouldn't go.
That's good.
They're not going to do that anymore.
Well, it had to have been Susan. My high school junior high band director was lazy and wouldn't have considered taking us to do anything.
There was a period like that when Kendra and them were in school, too. There was enough of them that they just knew, we, you know, we're not going to play Christmas songs because half the band won't be playing.
Right.
Well, I remember, too, when we went to Corpus those 2 years.
Yeah. Band, she's talking about.
Had to
work around some things. Now, this is an interesting one. Number 4, how can you work with your child's Bible school teacher to reinforce her teaching? Now, that's not saying you're working with her to make her do something. That's how can you work as a team to reinforce the teaching at home. What's the first and most important thing you can do to reinforce Bible school teaching at home?
Get their lesson.
Get their lesson and come.
Have them there.
On time. So they get the whole class, the whole lesson.
When they come running out of class too with their paper that they've done, they're so excited, you know, what did you learn? And they can tell you the story.
Listen to
because
them.
They've just come from there, so if you keep reinforcing that.
Right.
This is for the young girls in the class. Too late for me. But I wish that when we were raising our children, I had sat down with them and did their Bible lesson with them and discussed it. So then it would be reinforced in class. But I didn't do that. But you're young. Maybe that'll be a thought for you.
Well, I do think we have to acknowledge how difficult it is when you have a bunch of young children and you're trying to get dinner and get everybody dressed. I'll never forget Keith Rowland one Sunday morning in San Diego when all the kids were little. And we were talking. He said, "Did you see that article in the paper this morning?" I looked at him and I said,
"After services on Sunday,
this is Sunday morning, and I've got 3 kids to get ready for church, and that tells me you didn't help Vicki one little bit getting ready for church. You were sitting there reading the paper." So it's very difficult to work these things in, and we have to make sure that we have them at the top of the priority list. You know, is it more important that we iron the shirt, or is it more important that we get the Bible lesson with the child? And I agree with you, Mother. I didn't do it as well as I should have either. What are some practical ways of brainwashing our children spiritually? I prefer educating. But what are some of the things we can do regularly that help invest our children in their spiritual life?
Read the Bible?
Read the Bible with them. And if they're very young, get a Bible storybook, and you have to read it first to make sure it's on track. Roger had some movie on last night, night before last, about Jesus. And when he was going to be baptized, he went down into the river, and he got some water in the jug and came back out of the river. I've never even seen that approach. I mean, there was no sprinkling, no pouring, no immersing, no... He just got wet to here.
Oh, he didn't pour the water he got in the jug over him when he got out?
I couldn't figure out the whole scene and what was going on. But the everyday things that go on, always saying our prayer at the same time, because kids are very regulated, and I don't mean the time of day. I mean, do you pray before meals? Do you pray before bedtime? Do you pray for a devotional? Whatever your family does as a consistent thing. And the one thing that my children hated the most, and I hope was the most useful, was every time a situation came up, how does that reflect back? What are we talking about from biblical principles to make this decision? You know, should you wear that skirt? Well, I don't know. Let's see what the Bible has to say about it. Did you think about your language today? Did you think about how Christ would talk, or how he's taught us to talk? And always, always, as we make decisions, let our children know they're biblically based. They may be biblically based, but if we're not telling them, they have no way of knowing that that's just us internally.
Jane, Deuteronomy says, tell it to them morning, noon, and night. Put it on phylacteries and everything. Yeah. Now, I know that's probably a lot of Bible facts.
Right.
And we talked last week about we can't teach them just the facts. We
right.
have to teach them how to live.
Right. But the facts are what mean. Get us
but
there.
That's what start. That's a starting point.
That's what gets us there.
I know, talking about standing with your kids and teaching morning, noon, and night, there, you need to be there for your kids when they need you. There's quality time. The kids have come home from school heartbroken from time to time for whatever reason, and I was so glad I was there, you know, because they needed me then. And that's when we could talk about things and apply the biblical principles and pray and
right.
life's lessons
in that moment
and
that they needed.
More so when they're teenagers in high school, then, or maybe not more so, but
at least as
not
much as.
Not as much as, exactly.
Yeah. Well, I remember, you know, my mother didn't work outside while I was growing up. She worked later after Susan was older. But I remember on the days I'd come home and maybe she was at the grocery store. And I'm a teenager, you know, I'm going to school on my own coming home. And maybe she's at the grocery store or running an errand or something. Now, she didn't need to be there. For me, I was fully grown enough to be in there. But I was always a little disappointed because I wanted to tell her who talked to me in the hall or who. And by the time she got home, kind of it had worn off, you know. And it was no big deal. It wasn't anything
it
real special.
It was her new boyfriend.
It probably was.
She had a lot of it when she went through them.
I was unable to sustain a relationship. That's what that was. My friends were dating the same guy for years, and I'm going, ooh, I'm in love. Number nine, is it too late to start trying to teach a child who's already in his teens?
It's never too late.
Mm-hmm. It's never too late.
We have a parable about the people who worked in the vineyard. The ones that worked all day got the same pay as the ones who worked just a little bit of time. Mm-hmm. It's never too late. Is it harder? Yeah, it is. It's more of a struggle. We've got more work to do. And particularly, probably, in the teenage years, even more so than in the 20s or 30s. Because teenagers are so determined, most of them, to not do what their parents want.
Their can'ts. Their can'ts.
Yeah.
Teenagers.
Yeah.
I think you should always be trying until that person passes.
Always.
I mean, because it's...
Never give up.
What I remember... One time my daughters, we were having a little sit-to at my house. We were sitting around the table drinking coffee, and I said, I need to apologize to you all because I feel like I was too hard on you, maybe. and maybe unfairly hard on you. And they both looked at each other and started laughing, and they said, Mother, if you only knew, you would have beaten us twice a day. And they were good kids, you know, really. And I felt like I disciplined the entire neighborhood, because whatever my kids did is what the neighborhood did, yep. You know. And if I wouldn't let them go, then nobody went. And
you can't do it anymore.
But so many times I thought I was unreasonable with them, you know. And they said, no, you weren't too hard on us. But it's nice. It's nice to know that they still love me.
Yeah. I think it's very hard as a parent, because you want your children to love you and you want them to like you simply
because...
Well, I never
was my kid's friend.
No. They got a lot of friends. They need a mom. But you have to be willing to say when they say, I don't want to be here, I don't like you, well, I'm sorry. This is still what's in your best interest. And that's my job. My job is to do what's in your best interest. And I'm going to talk to God about that someday. He's going to say, you didn't do this, or this because you wanted your kid to like you. You were willing to risk their soul because you wanted them to like you. Now, our human side really wants that. Nothing's better. But to understand how many of us have forced a young child to get a shot or take some medicine? They didn't like us when we were doing it. But we did it because we knew they needed it. I actually had to sit on Clay when he was about 6 and poke medicine down his throat, because it was what he needed, and I was willing to do what he needed. But we sometimes want to slack off spiritually. And I think that's because we can't see the reaction right then. If the kid doesn't take the medicine, they keep being sick, and they've got fever, or, you know, whatever. You've got some physical attributes that say, I didn't do what I should have, and this is the child suffering for it. But we don't often see that suffering when we haven't done what we need to do spiritually for them. Now, sometimes we do. We can see them go off on a terrible path. I have friends whose children have turned to drugs, who are in jail, all these things, because they weren't willing to try to set that spiritual path. So sometimes you see the result of it, but not always. And I think it makes it easier for us to kind of go, oh, well, it's okay. It's okay. I won't think about that today. We tend to be scarlet a lot of times. I'll think about that tomorrow. And we only have so many tomorrows. How do you work with a teenager who no longer wants to go to worship services? Who lives in your house, I might add? What do you do?
I think that's the time whenever you really need to make them go.
Well, yeah, they would go.
Yeah.
If they were in my house, they would go. And, as long as you're here, you're going. When you're not here.
Right. And, go ahead, Carol.
I think one of the problems is when teenagers start getting jobs. Most all of these retail jobs, they have to work on Sundays, either morning or evening. We just had a very young teenager at church get her first job, and she's doing housekeeping at one of the hotels in town. But at the interview, she told them on her own that she could not work on Sundays. And I thought, what a blessing. But thankfully, that was a place that could allow, they had enough people, and they could allow that to happen.
Right.
So many of the restaurants and fast food places and stuff like that just won't do it. But from my experience, with my two, that was a real low time in their spiritual lives, is when they first got their first jobs.
I agree.
And had to work on Sunday.
Because they're very excited about having a job, so it takes a whole lot of importance on. And the thought that they can't say anything about when they can work or can't work. So I agree. And Caroline, you and Sarah are too young to remember there was a time when stores weren't open on Sundays. It was against the law for most of them. Mm-hmm. You could sell, what were some of those blue laws? You could sell diapers if you were open.
But you couldn't sell foreign wares.
Yeah, something weird. Yeah. Maybe you couldn't sell diapers, but you could sell formula.
Something weird.
Something weird. But there was this list of things that could be sold, and if you were going to be open, you could only sell these things.
And it was usually just the grocery stores and drug stores that were open.
And nobody else was open.
Not department stores at all.
So, it changed. Yep. And maybe not for the better.
Money.
Mm. Yeah.
They wanted more money.
Money changes everything. How can we present the Bible? Oh, well, let's go back to that teenager thing for a minute. I have actually heard teenagers, not mine, thankfully, say, well, you can make me go there, but you can't make me want to be there. True. Mm-hmm. I can't change your attitude, but I can force the action as long as you're here. Well, if you make me go, I'm just going to hate it. That's a chance I'll have to take. Maybe somebody there can help you. Maybe somebody there can touch you when I haven't. You know.
And it's obvious.
Yeah.
The people there, that they don't want to be there.
See, right. But when they're there, is that like, I mean, yes, you're making them go, but if they're going to have that sour of an attitude, chances are they're going to sit there in the pew with their arms crossed. They're not going to grab a songbook. They're not going to grab a Bible. So is that whenever, like, you would make them do that, wouldn't you?
I would.
Okay. I'm so scared about raising my kids. I don't want to do something wrong.
None of us know too, and everybody should be a little bit scared.
I know I will, but I'm saying, like, especially biblically.
Well, that's good that you're taking it that seriously. I see way too many people. You know, I worked with Head Start for a long time, and we had moms, and I use that term very loosely, who were 12. So you can guarantee that they're not thinking seriously about how they're going to bring up their children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, or anything else, how they're going to feed them. Just no concept. So I'm pleased that you're 12. Work on that one for a few minutes. It's very frightening. So it's good to be frightened about it. There's a certain level of fear that you should have in approaching such a huge, solemn, important task. So would I make my child go and participate? Yes. Can I force the attitude? No. However, when the end comes, they're going to have to talk to God about their attitude. I'm going to have to talk to God about whether or not I made them go. Mm-hmm.
What's the best way to approach that, though? Like with them, making them think, making them open their Bible?
You know, I'm not going to say this is the best approach. One approach that I would use, they're sitting up there with the kids, I'm just going to go sit by them. And I'm going to open their songbook up and set it in their lap, put my arm around them, sing real loud. Next time they'll probably want me to stay in my own pew and they'll do it.
Right. That's one thing with some parents I met. I was always, the kids sat in front of me, so I was always there. Mm-hmm. But if my kid wasn't doing something, I'm there.
And I'm hoping you were poking mine too.
Well, some I did and some I didn't know if I should do that or not. So, right. But if you see your child not doing what they shouldn't, they need to be back over there with you.
Right.
So you can correct
and,
them.
And our rule always was that our children had to sit either with us or in line with us or in front of us. No behind us. Ever.
No.
Yeah. Kaylee gets to sit with you sometimes when you sit at the back, but she's sitting with, she spent a couple of times going to just sit back in the back by herself. No, you'll just be up here with us. So, and she's 19, but that's still the rule.
And kids don't get that. I mean, if you raise your kid young, like you should, when they're teenagers, there's a good chance they're not going to be that way.
Right.
If you have done your job as they're growing up. You know, kids don't just usually
turn
like that.
A lot of times you get a little spark of rebellion around 13 or 14, just when they're starting to go into junior high, feel a little bit more independent, and that's a little easier to nip. That's the time when that serious embarrassment stuff is a good factor.
And I've always talked to my kids openly. You know, some people have shielded their kids from problems, which not all problems in the church, but being preachers' kids, they see stuff, and on their level, we have talked to them about, what's the problem and why they shouldn't be this way or whatever. But it's the same way with our family. You know, a lot of them aren't Christians, and we were always teaching and saying, and even some that weren't so strong, like Sarah's dad, it's like, this is not right.
Yeah.
So, you know, you need to understand that this is not the norm for Christians, and in teaching Jimmy even, you know. So there's, you just are always teaching.
Right.
Always. Right. Look for that opportunity. And
I listened last night to a sermon, and it wasn't on our subject, but it was, it's on the it's in Ephesians, and this preacher's subject was the commandment that a man is supposed to be the head of his household, and he cited, which it scared me, I mean it scared his daughter too, he cited a situation in which his teenage daughter came through the house, and he told her she didn't have enough clothes on, go change clothes and put on some clothes. And she told him she had her clothes on, and this was what she was going to wear. And they had a little exchange, and finally he said, I just told her, I've seen you naked before. I will take those clothes off of you if you don't take them off. And I thought, whoa. And of course, his point was, as a daddy, that was his duty to get that strong, if that's what it took. He said she changed her clothes.
I bet she did.
But it is hard to stand up to them when they defy you.
It is hard. You have to be stronger, and you have to have a thick hide, and you have to just say, this is what's the best thing, and I'm going to do this.
And I happen to know that he and that daughter now adore each other. Well, he adored her then.
Sure.
He wouldn't have commanded that if he hadn't. But I thought, well, I don't know if it scared her, but it would scare me.
Well, and I have never been afraid to tell my children, I will have to answer to God for how I handle this situation. Therefore, I'm going to do what I'm supposed to do. And I'm hoping you're going to do what you're supposed to do, but I am for sure. Because when the end comes, God's not going to excuse me because he says, well, one of your kids pouted at you, and so you backed off, so that's okay. It's not going to happen. Mother, do you have some answer?
I was just going to say to the young girls who have not chosen someone to marry, look for a man with a deep voice who doesn't speak too much. And then they listen.
Yeah.
When they do speak up.
Daddy never talked much, but when he did, it's time to pay attention. In fact, in the car, the only thing he ever said was, yeah, okay, whatever. Stop.
And yet they both, all three loved him more than they loved me.
He was more fun. We didn't love him more. He was more fun. Because he didn't concern himself with the everyday stuff that you had to concern yourself with. And I told you a couple of times I thought, because of his calm demeanor, I thought I could edge my way into something. He was not about to get that play mother and dad against each other. How can we present the Bible as a book of positives rather than negatives? Because I will acknowledge that children, because we're training them up, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. They do, if we're not careful, learn to see the Bible as a negative thing. I think we have to work with young children, especially, to make it be positive. How can we do that?
Instead of always saying don't, say you can't do this, but it says right here that you can do this.
Right. Here's how we can
reinforcement.
Live. Right.
And it's not always, that's one thing I did learn at a workshop for the preschool I was at.
Yes.
Is don't always just tell them don't, because then they're just going to look at you and think they can't do anything. And then they're going to sit there and wonder, well, what can I do?
Or the no, we tell people in early childhood not to say no. Well, that doesn't mean you don't ever say no. It just means you don't use that word constantly, so that when you do say it, it has meaning. So if you want them to quit doing something that's small, you just move them, you know, when they're little, let them do something else. So that when you say the word no, oh, okay, that's big, that's important. And I think that's true here, too. If we're teaching biblical principles of life, we don't have to talk about the no all the time. If we're saying love each other, we don't have to say don't be mean to each other, because we've already said it over here in a more positive way. If we need to, we can go negative. But for the most part, if we can present the Bible as a guidebook that shows God's love for us to put us in the best possible situation in this life and the one after, then we have a better chance of making it, and I want to say this carefully because I'm making it palatable, but I don't mean by watering down his word. I'm saying use what he's already told us. I think Christians are supposed to be the happiest people in the world. We have a wonderful life here because we live a good and honest and moral life, and we have the hope of eternal life. Why wouldn't we be the happiest people on the face of the earth? But I do think some people want to use only the negative parts of the Bible, and it doesn't explain to us the joy that we have. And we're told we're to have joy in our lives. So, comments on that?
Back to parents, when the kids, they don't do a lot of stuff with kids at school, so as parents at church, it's the parents' responsibility to get kids together and to do stuff after church and plan activities for all the children at church to get together. That's where the parents need to not, it can be kind of tiring sometimes.
It can.
But it's important.
Well,
it's got to come from the parents because you can't expect somebody that doesn't have kids. They're just kind of, it's hard to be in with the
in-group.
It is.
And most kids are going to find a social group. Now, there you'll have a few kids who are loners and don't do that. But, 99.9% of the kids are going to find a group. It's up to us as parents to help them find appropriate groups. And if the kid's very best friend is not a Christian and also not a person who is even interested in Christianity at all, which a lot of these kids are being brought up with zero, then how is that going to influence your child? Does it make this kid who doesn't know anything evil? No, but it certainly doesn't make them good and wholesome because they haven't had the training in the background to be good and wholesome. And perhaps your child can have an influence. I never want to ignore that because I have very good friends that became Christians because of being in our home. Over time, that influence brought them to Christ. So I never want to ignore that, but you need to be looking at who your kids are best friends with, who they spend their time with, who they look to spend time with. Because if you have a child at 8 who has zero training, I guarantee you they're not going to be better at 15. Or 16. It's not going to be a better situation for your child because they've had no guidance on how to make decisions, on what to base it on where to go for guidance. So does it matter who their friends are when they're 8? Yep, sure does. Caroline?
This is kind of a off the topic question. It seemed like you were wrapping it up, but if you still have
something
to say about
no.
that. Okay. So I'm wondering how you can make your spirituality, your own personal relationship with God, how you can get that across to your children without it just being like a moralizing thing. How do you show them that this is part of my life, this is the most important relationship I have, without just, okay, it's 8 o'clock, let's have Bible study time.
Right. And that's the everyday thing. That's the... you found something in the parking lot and it's got somebody's name on it. Do you just, it's a billfold with $50 in it. You take it home? No, you take it back into the store and say, this person dropped this. And kids are picking that up. They know. And all those little things. Here's one of my personal pet peeves. People that eat the grapes in the grocery store. You can drink a carton of milk if you want to, because that milk's the same, and you're going to pay for the carton empty or full. You can take it and pay for it. But you can't pay for a grape you already ate. And I think kids see those little things. People always talk about, well, don't cheat on your taxes, your kids will know. I doubt it. How many kids look at tax returns or care if you try to explain it to them? But they see those everyday things.
This is a biggie. My dad has a handicap sticker on his car.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel so good. I won't park. You shouldn't.
Well, you can't.
It's against
the
law. But
people do.
You could put it up there and park in the handicap
If I'm in the car and my daughter's shopping for me, and I stay in the car and she goes in and does my shopping, she won't park in
the handicap. She won't do it because it's not for your benefit. And I that's a really good example because it's one kids can see all the time.
One thing, I just learned this, I got the concept early that, you know, God is watching. Nobody else may know, but right. The Lord can see us. And I've always told my kids that, you know, I may never find out, or other people may not, but the Lord knows.
You know,
He always knows what you're doing.
In the last few years, I've kind of made it a habit or a forced issue. Somebody gave me the wrong change the other day, and it wasn't much wrong change, but I said, no, that's not right. I gave it back. She said, thank you for being honest. And I said, God's watching. She just kind of went, yes, He is. And I think saying those kinds of things every now and then to somebody is helping. And I would always say that to my children if they'd say, well, why are you doing that? Nobody cares. God cares.
And it's hard to say, you know, I wasn't always very vocal. But, you know, really it's did. Easier. It's, you know, like you said with your kids, right. God's watching. Just little things like that at first make it seem kind of weird, but it gets... and it makes an impact. And you don't have to do it every time. I mean, you don't. Some people throw out their God in every word they open
right.
their mouth.
I don't think
and I don't
we can treat God frivolously. And there's a difference between being frivolous and showing that He's a part of our everyday lives all the time. Do y'all know that song, There's an Eye Watching You?
Yes, I
got to tell you, my brother and I hated that song. I always had this idea of this disemboweled eye sitting up here with veins and things, you know. And somebody's singing, Mike and I would look at each other, and it was all we could do to keep from just busting out laughing. We could just barely make it through this.
When the kids got their phones, Stan would take a picture of his eye closed up, you know, so they turn it on, his eyes right there.
That's good. I like that. Dad's watching too.
Funny.
All right, I think we've beat this lesson to death. We are going to start chapter 4 next time.